My name is Laurens Jacht, and welcome to Cybersecurity Talks, the interview podcast for cybersecurity professionals and for those who aspire to become one. Join us on our journey and learn about the latest trends, real-life war stories, and everything you need to know about this fascinating industry.
Welcome back to Cybersecurity Talks. Today, I have the pleasure to interview Paul Moreno. Paul is currently the CISO at Katawiki. Paul lives in Amsterdam, but started his career 25 years ago back in California, where he also grew up. He also worked in IT security related positions and worked in leadership roles for a lot of different cool tech companies. I would just name a few: AT&T, Pinterest, Uber, Cisco, DigiCert, and Adyen. Besides being the CISO at Katawiki, Paul's also a startup investor and startup advisor. And I'm just beyond excited to have him on the show. Welcome, Paul.
Thank you for having me. Excited to be here too.
Before we jump into the thing that we want to discuss, cybersecurity, I'm also curious, what are some other passions of yours?
If I wasn't going to be in cybersecurity, my friends joke and say I'd be probably a better lawyer or probably an artist, which is a pretty big difference and distinction between the two. Yeah.
But now you live in Amsterdam, but you grew up in the States. What did you want to become as a little boy? Was it a lawyer or an artist? Or because cyber wasn't a thing back then.
Not really. I think as a child, I always thought computing, at least then before I was of age, was related to video games. So I think video games were my first exposure to computing. Like many people, I grew up in the 80s. So it was big fan of anything arcade game oriented. And then as the home computing era came in about, seeing people that had Commodore 64s and Nintendo and the Ataris, et cetera. So I was always gravitating towards anything that was pretty and engaging. You can click a mouse with eventually. So I think I was always gravitating towards being in tech. I hadn't really found my position mentally. But like many folks, when I was growing up in the 90s, I was subjected to that awful movie Hackers. So maybe that had something to do with it. I've known a lot of people that ended up getting into this industry because of the Hollywood flashy representation. But ultimately, no, I think I always wanted to work in computing. But I went on to do kind of networking, like networking with switches, et cetera, before becoming like an IT systems administrator. And then kind of progressing and getting more operational work underneath my my skill set. And then eventually actually did have an opportunity to work in gaming. So I think gaming, again, was always, and I always have had a knack for it. I like it personally. And then professionally, it was kind of cool to be able to see my contribution help promote and develop gaming that everybody was, or not everybody, but a lot of people would be joyful to play.
Yeah, and that's what triggered me, because you work with some really big companies, AT&T, Cisco, but also some startup and scale ups, also in the Bay Area. What was that like in the beginning? Like that's where a lot of cool things happened in the IT field, but also in the cybersecurity space. What was the environment like back then?
Yeah, well, I moved. Right out of the limited college, I did right over back into the Bay Area. So I went to high school in Colorado, but I grew up in Santa Cruz, California. So I kind of have that data hippie vibe at heart. So going back there, I went against the grain and moved there in maybe 2000, just as the dot-com bubble was about to explode. And so it was kind of funny to watch that. Everybody was just then starting to get internet. My first jobs there, at least in the Bay Area, was with AT&T performing on-site, cable modem installation with some cable technicians that weren't the most brightest with IT or technology, but someone young like me was able to kind of train them up, and then also did a lot of installations with some famous people living in Marin County. So it was kind of a cool area to be during that era. And then eventually, like a lot of others, worked in mortgage banking as an IT systems administrator. So I think it was a little bit more dry then, at least for me. I was big into Microsoft at the time, which a lot of people I think still to this day are, which is great. And so a part of my kind of experience there, I always inherited some security things. So working in that area, I got my hands on a lot of different types of piece of tech, physical and then software wise, and then eventually kind of expanded. I don't know, maybe just me, but I do just get bored of some things and want to move on to something different to try it. So I got really more into Linux and virtualization technology, Mac operating systems and stuff like that to expand and learn how to support those things, which I think that combination is what led me to my first big break working at a small game company called NG Moco, which was one of the first developers for iPhone 3G when they came out with I think it was the first phone with a GPU, or at least the first Apple phone with a GPU in it.
Okay, nice. Yeah. And then I saw shortly after you, not shortly, but after a while, you decide to leave there and join Pinterest, which was probably a small organization back then, but went on a really nice journey. What was that like? And what was also your responsibility coming in as a sort of the security guru back then?
So first I went to Zynga, which was another game company first, which was fairly short-lived, but also in gaming. But that was my first real solid role in security, meaning that's all I was focused on. And then they went IPO. That didn't really go so well. So I actually chose Pinterest against an offer I had from Apple, which I think most of my friends thought I was crazy. But the real reason I wanted to go to Pinterest was actually because it was so close to my house in San Francisco. And Zynga was actually not too far from it. You could actually, I think, see the buildings. So I went there thinking I was joining a rather small company, which it was about 100 people then, that my friends made fun of me thinking was a recipe website. But I did see some potential there. I did end up taking a few cell interviews before they got me on board, but what appealed to me was small, and then everybody there did seem to have a passion. Like the one thing I think that's greatly different between the U.S. and kind of Europe is in the U.S. I think the startups there, everybody kind of feels that sense of camaraderie from the beginning. So your trust levels start full instead of here, where I think it takes some time to develop that level of trust. So there, people all wanted to work on the same page and do great things. But Pinterest at the time had no clue what the hell they were doing to make money. So it was also like a big risk, which I think was also part of the fun. But I started there when there was no other security personnel. Their IT manager started later, who's a good friend of mine still to this date. So we got to kind of a clean start to do things the way we wanted to, learning from our past lives to see what didn't work. So we had a clean slate to really develop a strategy and a small program that ended up working fairly well. I started their first little team and some basic strategy that was just loosely aligned with PCI controls. We didn't really have a huge amount of budget to invest, but we were still trying to triage and stop what we knew about. And that's also where the bug bounty program stuff came into play, where I saw a lot of value there versus penetration testing, which is a little bit more tried and true and standard, but didn't yield as many good results. So I did have, a little flexibility to try things that weren't normalized in the security industry. And that included like hiring some pretty diverse talent there and adopting another person within the business for security, because they were really good at it, or really good development. And then also sought out to be passionate with it. So yeah, my Pinterest days were good.
Yeah, I can imagine. And bug bounty, what was that? Those programs, was that a big thing back in the day, or were you one of the early adapters? Believers.
I wouldn't say it was an early adopter. There was larger enterprises that had done this type of thing, and then maybe closed programs with researchers, but for the mainstream it wasn't really prolific yet. So I think it was, at least we were, our name became larger as a company, mainly due to funding rounds and maybe some TechCrunch articles, so that put a little bit more attention on us. And when I did launch it, I realized how many people were hungry to try to hack us. So definitely was, I wouldn't say experimental, but experimental for a company of our size at that maturity level to try. And it worked out great. We saw an immediate return and results versus costs that we spent into it. And then generally the community was pretty savvy to, you know, get paid for what they're doing. But they were easy to work with. And then I chose a platform at the time, Bugcrowd, that ended up working really well for us since there was only a few options at the time. And being a cloud native company, I was really pushy on having what's called SAML integration. So Bugcrowd actually beat the competitor to the punch on a development of that feature. And that's why I ended up going with them at the end of the day.
I'm just curious, like you're in the Bay Area, you work for Pinterest, that's grown great. It's become a hip and well-known company. What was the ambience just for European people, especially during those days, like the Bay Area, the Silicon Valley was where all the cool stuff was happening, and you're really in the middle of it and seeing such growth in the company that you represent. What was it like? Was it just working all the times and being goofy and nerdy, or was it also like big crazy celebrations and living the the fancy life?
It's kind of mixed. I'd say there was a transitional period. I was only there for the span of just about 3 years. But during that time, I saw a stark difference between San Francisco, between those two periods of time. And I think during that time, we had a lot of pressure from other tech companies from a hiring spree, like the whole FANG thing, if you know that term, was it Facebook, Apple, Netflix, Google. So that expanded in including Amazon and a few others, but that put a lot of pressure on competition and along with it, a lot of high-end salaries. So you had folks that are just out of university, designers and stuff like that, coming in with a first offer of $130,000 out the door. So that caused a pretty massive level of inflation in the area for housing. And then San Francisco never really did well with its homeless problem. So for me, I saw that. I was like, tech was exploding there. And then as I would go out and, have fun and live my life, I started to notice everybody was in tech, and everybody you talked to was talking about tech. So it was tech, tech, tech. So you had people on scooters and electric skateboards everywhere. And then Uber came about. So it was high end black cars that cost you 50 euros to go about 10 minutes up the street. So I have a mixed feeling. I saw it go from what I thought was fun to a lot more high stakes. And then I think with that came some egos that were a little bit more, less of that trust bucket full type of thing.
Yeah. Okay. No, thanks. Thanks for sharing your insights. It's just for me as a Dutch person, interesting what happened in that city during those times. Yeah. But I saw that in 2016, you make your way to the Netherlands. So you decide to leave the Bay Area and join Uber here in the Netherlands, and also as the EMEA security lead engineer. Mm-hmm. That sounds like a very cool position. Can you go a bit deeper on how you got the job? How did you relocate to the Netherlands? Was it cool? Was it stressful?
I'd say it was both cool and stressful for sure. But I actually got connected through a former colleague from a company I mentioned, Zynga, that got me a job at Uber. I said I just didn't want to go in San Francisco. There's no way. I was already looking at other offers from companies out of Sydney, Australia, and looking between there and Berlin, Germany. And then this one came out of nowhere. And Amsterdam was the location. I always thought I'd been to Amsterdam before. And I was like, okay, it's a cool city. It's a little small. And thinking to myself, maybe just go there for a couple years and see how things develop with Pinterest, to see if that those stocks or those options that I got go anywhere, and then reconsider where you want to be. So I start at Uber. Pretty quickly, I learned that some of the colleagues that I'd had there were not the best in the form of ethics. So you probably know there was the CISO there was prosecuted by the feds for covering up some data breach stuff, which I had a little bit too close a knowledge given my background in bug bounty program advisory, since that's actually how they paid the hackers off. So there was a little bit of a personal I don't know, almost like feeling insulted that that's how they wanted to operate. So there was a few others involved with that case and incident that I just didn't want to have anything to do with. So Uber was a short-lived hop for me, but I at least owe it getting me here to Amsterdam. And I ended up, after leaving there, went to Adyen, which was a great darling company too, culturally much better too and enriched. But ended up staying and liking Amsterdam way more than I thought. So it got me here. Uber, you know, as a company, has had its ups and downs. I don't look back at working there necessarily, maybe some of the people I worked with there. But I definitely was, I'm thankful it got me to where I'm at as far as where the cities and the location in Europe is.
Yeah. And then the move to Adyen, I think you have a nick for joining companies on a time that they're, yeah. they're in a good scale up phase, because Adyen also had an amazing journey forward. How do you decide upon what company to go for and what company not to go for? Because you said I choose Pinterest over Apple. And then your friends told you what's going on. You're crazy.
Yeah.
So what makes you feel confident in making the calls? What's your decision process like?
Well, you'll laugh. So I think I learned a little bit from the Pinterest thing. And then I did go to Uber because I thought that would be successful, which, you know, I'd consider that financially, yes, but wasn't the whole reason I was there. It got me to Netherlands, like I said. Adyen happens to have been Uber's payment processors. So I was also friends with people that work at AWS and some other tech industry folks. And one of them had also told me, like, oh, yeah, Adyen's identified. It's going to go places, blah, blah, blah. And I said, yeah, but just at that point, I was shell-shocked to see how crappy the people were at Uber on the security team as far as culture and ethics go. So I was shell-shocked to go, like, oh, no, I don't know if I want to join a company that's going to have that type of attitude. And so I ended up, you know, calling in a friend who happened to know their COO, with Sam Hulse. So I actually talked to this guy at length before I decided to apply to see what it was like. And so time period wise, or being lucky in their successes and contributing to it in some way, I think I've been lucky to join companies that do start to take their security program seriously. So it's natural that, you know, if you find that company that's just starting their journey down building a cybersecurity program at a mature level, that's a good start. I mean, it's still a gamble. Not all companies succeed in after building a security team and having their product also be successful. Those are two separate things. So I consider Adyen was lucky. I'd had a great journey there too. But I also want to go back full circle and say that it was also super close to my house. So, so I think I was the closest employee to that, their main office here next to Central Station. Yeah.
I think that's the key indicator for you. Can I walk to the office?
Can I walk? Well, I mean, you bike here, but still, it was literally, I think I split my time walking and biking, which I think very few people I know are that level of spoiled. So maybe it's just me getting older or wiser and saying I'd rather not spend my time in a car or on a train to go to work. So,
yeah. No, cool. And you joined Adyen as the Senior Vice President of Cybersecurity. Should I see that as sort of the Deputy CISO, something like
no,
that?
No, honestly, they're a very flat hierarchy. So I think it's really by title and pay grade, which, you know, years of experience-wise, sure. I think titles don't name what you do. So they're very much so flat. It wasn't really a form of traditional management with road mapping and all that stuff. But that was back then. I don't know how they are now, being a public company. But it was a lot more loose. So there wasn't really genuine reporting lines. It was more like someone had a manager by title or a VP title, et cetera. But yeah, I mean, it was brought in from being a lead, which is more of a technical position, I guess, where I was at Uber and Pinterest. I did a lot more variety of things that were technical related. With Adyen was more of subject matter expertise in the areas I was good at. So for good or bad, I took on the it's a task or obligation almost to load some cryptographic keys there into some fancy banking hardware, which is not the most glamorous type of work, honestly. But if you've stuck a credit card into an Adyen terminal in the last couple of years, it probably loaded one or more of the keys that it was used to transmit the data. So,
okay, that's pretty techy stuff. Yeah. And did you feel that the difference between working in the Netherlands and say in California, because you mentioned earlier the comradeship and having the same goal and the drive and mentality. I think the Americans are also known to take a bit more risk, like we go big or we fail, but we gotta give it our best. What was it like to then work for Adyen, which is a financial services company? There of course is a lot of risk-based decision making. What was it like for you coming from the US and looking at the pace, looking at the energy that goes into it, the dedication? Was it a big difference?
Yes, I think. I mean, as I mentioned, the flat hierarchy. So you could walk into any of the management team's office or wherever they happen to be. Like, and you definitely had no feeling that they were like acting superior to you or having that kind of exuberant ego. I think the founders there were super chill about that culture and making sure people felt comfortable that way. So that's more Adyen specific, but I think also comparatively to the Bay Area, they're a lot less, they were more risk averse, a lot less willing to take risk, but they are again financially, supervised. So they had a lot of regulatory tape to wrangle too. But with that, they also were like, it was a good company for like kind of anti-meeting culture, which I did like. They're big on just doing things over a cup of coffee. So if you had to do a meeting, it was like the last ditch effort before you could just do it over asynchronous or you have a talk with someone in person to go do things. So I did like a lot of those elements. And then diversity wise, they're a lot more diverse than any company I ever worked at in America. But like you get a lot of not just Europeans, but you get people from Eastern Europe, you get people from South America, obviously Americans. Some Asians as well. So it's kind of all over the place, right? So you didn't really feel like, you felt, I felt very exposed to different cultures, which is good. And then with that, different communication styles. Some people take things very literally. Some people are okay with humor. I tend to be a very humorous person. So I had to learn how to stop and show some boundaries and maybe draw some lines before making jokes and stuff like that. So but I still tend to try to make everybody laugh a little bit when I deal with a serious topic like security. Life's too short not to.
Yeah. And what's the best day if you look back at that period or the thing that you're most proud of that you have achieved with your team, with your colleagues? It's something that can also be from previous jobs so that you really feel like, shit, we nailed it. We did it.
Yeah.
We prevented a major breach or we did something awesome that... that might be cool to share with the listeners.
You know, I'd say it comes back to the bug bounty program because I really did see so much signal, and I currently do with my role now, that's preventative. And so that is a feeling of accomplishment where you can get and rely on, you know, pretty much a random stranger, at least that's performing a level of KYC with the platform, to be honest enough to report something that could be detrimental to your product and your customers too. So I think that's given me a sense of pride when I see a really good report. I definitely am happy to hit the pay you button for one. And then two, you know, feel like happy bringing that to the developers and say, look what random guy found on the internet that we didn't catch, you know? So it's showing that there is other people out there that are a little bit more like, you know, white hat guardian angels that will watch over your product or your customers too. So I think that's probably one of my best days and best feelings as I get to work at companies that do promote and have a bug bounty program.
So that's really in your philosophy as a CISO nowadays as well. Yeah.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah.
If the company that you would join is not believing in the bug bounty programs, then it might already be a no-go for you.
Maybe, or at least not open to the idea. I mean, maybe they're too junior in their journey. you know, to open to a bug bounty program. At Katowiki, certainly didn't want to do that to us right away. We had a pile of things that needed to be addressed before that in a matter of priority. So, but yeah, if my next place in my career, you know, wherever I end up, I probably will make that a focal point in discussion. At least get that being someone, at least let the person know that sparks joy with me, you know.
So. Yeah, nice. And you already said it, but now you work for Katowiki. I think 3.5 years ago, you joined the company as the CISO. Was it always your goal and dream to be sort of the major responsible person for everything cyber related?
Yeah, I mean, where I'm at, it's a VP by title. Again, the title's thing's not as big for me, but still acting CISO. Wherever I go next, yeah, I think the leadership element will be a focus point. But also, what I get joy out of too is building the team. You know, the strategy part of it, you can take commodity controls that are out there, you know, via PCI controls, service processor, like that in, or as a merchant, or ISO 27001, or SysControl, some other open framework. That's your measurement system, but also the team building part of it to actually execute on reducing the risk of those controls and all that. That's also a fun part of it for me too. So I think for me, wherever I go, I do that builder mode where I get to build strategy, build a team, make some people happy along the way, not just the management team or the board, but also individuals on the team that also have an opportunity to build and then see their work turn into something that actually has meaning to the business. So
I think that's a rare find, like the CISO that enjoys and is good at both of those components. Some are just loving the tick the box and we follow the procedures and the structure.
Yeah.
And they love that side of the business, more the technical side perhaps as well. But then to grow a team and manage the team and see if the people in the team flourish, that's something a lot of people just hate or give them headaches.
Depends on their attitude. I think I'm depends on their attitude. I think I'm a pretty extroverted person. So some are highly technical and more introverted, and some people get highly agitated when things don't go their way. So I show both of those characteristics sometimes too, but I think generally on a broad evaluation, I'm pretty even keeled and do enjoy those parts. I think the human element is underlooked, as you said, or at least not as common in CISOs and VPs or heads of security out there.
Yeah. And do you feel this role is more challenging than other roles because you also have to deal with the board and it's becoming more and more a stakeholder management role than being technically involved yourself? How do you see that?
Where I'm at specifically, harder mainly because of the headwinds we're facing as an industry. You know, there's a lot of tech layoffs and companies that aren't producing the numbers they used to. So that adds a layer of resource scarcity to any strategy. So you got to do more for less and be more efficient. Not to say that we're inefficient or what we do can be inefficient, but I'd say this particular environment that we're all in right now has caused a lot of scarcity for those resources. So you got to be a little bit more clever in what you do, make better decisions, treat the highest of the risks. You got to be ruthless in your prioritization. So not everything can get solved in an orderly fashion or time. So,
yeah, but you are a tech guy for the last 25 years. You work mainly for cool tech companies that are around the corner. How do you see this evolving? Because indeed, the tech industry is going through some rough times. Would you be willing to switch to other industries? Or do you feel I've seen so much in this tech field that's just me, that's who I am?
You know, if I have a four-year plan out in the future somewhere, it probably involves being on with a VC, maybe as an operator or something where I get to have a hand in multiple businesses. So I think something I learned is definitely companies, we all make the same mistakes, whether we realize it or not. So something I've seen as a pattern. So stopping that early and maybe having accessibility and visibility and accountability to an early stage startup that's got VC money that with a VC that's willing to provide an operator that has that advisory function, I can see myself doing something like that where it's across multiple types of industry and not one industry. You know, one thing I've never done is manufacturing. I always go like, how is stuff made? Like, what security goes into that? Is it also physical supply chain stuff, or do they have, is there firmware involved? That really makes things weird and wacky too. Like if we talked about potential issues with, were you having it made in China or whatever? So yeah, I'm open to other new things. Again, that scratches that itch for trying something new, taking myself a little bit more challenged as a person.
Are you easily bored?
No, I don't think so. I think it takes a while to get me bored. I definitely do. I find myself with habits like a lot of people. So I don't think I get bored of everything. It's maybe just one or two things that either don't spark that joy or make me super frustrated, you know, like having anybody else. I think nobody wants to do something that's really hard that they don't get enjoyment from, or something that's super hard and boring. So.
Like driving to the office.
Like driving. riding a train for an hour and a half. Or what Apple was suggesting when I turned them down is, oh, you can ride on the Apple bus for an hour and a half. You can work on it. I can't think of anything more nauseating and boring than to sit on an Apple bus, even if it's got fancy coffee and snacks. I just didn't have that one going in my head.
I didn't notice Apple bus was a thing, but
a lot of tech companies, like especially in San Francisco, they got into that. Let's cater them from the most expensive high density city in the area because nobody wants to live outside of it into the least dense area that's in Cupertino. And they were just too reluctant to have another satellite office up there. They just didn't want people working in a location that was outside of the mothership, I think. So,
okay. Yeah. Interesting. But you already touched upon it, looking ahead, what the future might bring. You are already a tech advisor and a tech investor. Is that perhaps something moving forward that you just become more and more an advisor to different tech companies? And how do you see that as a, are you wearing the security hat then, or just more the tech hat?
I mean, I've always expanded a little outside of security. I mean, with my IT background in general, so where I'm at now, I also manage the IT department. In addition, they have a manager that reports to me, but that's something that I can see myself doing. It's more of like a CIO or something like that down the road. But yeah, definitely with someone with a company that has multiple elements to it, or something like a VC, so maybe as part of an offering from a venture capital company, private equity, something like that. I mean, my current, self-promoting here is investment in Bear Security, which is like a SimGrep competitor that does a lot of static application security testing to look for secrets and stuff like that. So I think cool products like that are innovative, not that they're the first to market with it, but they're competition in the space that's innovating in it. I like to have my hands in that. I also don't have this listed anywhere. I think I forgot that I'm an investor in Blind, which is an application that people can sign into with their corporate email that will let you anonymously talk about the company. So there's an app. I'm also an angel investor in there too. So I like at least different types of applications. So that is more true like the Bay Area used to be, a little bit more innovation. So I personally will only look at companies like that. I won't invest in something that's supposed to be the next Uber for dogs, for example. So
yeah. within barriers. Okay. And say you and I have to start a new venture tomorrow in the cybersecurity space. What would be your first ideas? Where do you see there's still a lot of blue ocean? So what are the opportunities you feel for the startup scene in the cybersecurity domain?
Well, I think from the people side of it, I think trying to find a way to bring cybersecurity training into people's homes, so that's part of their daily life. I think that's something that's, I've not seen too much exploration. There's a lot of corporate security products out there that will help reduce your personnel's risk to the business on that light. But they try to bring it into the home, but they don't really do anything to bring it into the home. So I think that's the talking about it versus taking action. So something like, you know, some way to do a fitness test on their home machine, you know, that's not too invasive to say, hey, like, if you're doing this here, you definitely shouldn't be doing it at work. So, or vice versa, you know, something like that. So there's a couple other areas I had some thoughts of. I'm big on threat response. No matter what we all do on an industry level, we're all fighting the same problems just in a different form year after year. So it's been challenging to change things. So I'm trying to think how to build a product that can help, you know, help with speedy response without having to outsource it to some sort of SOC, like a paid SOC or something like that. Maybe AI will come into play to see if they've got ways to automatically or use AI to do security orchestration and response. So there's a SIEM is the alerting and, you know, logging and monitoring part, and then SOAR is the taking action part. I think there's a big missing link there right now. So
okay. I was really triggered by the first idea you brought up, so to create training, but not only inside the office, but also at the home of people. I don't want to take too much away from your busy schedule, so I want to wrap up with one final question, and that's if you can share one signal message with all the CISOs across the entire planet, what would you say then in that signal message?
Something that a coach of mine said that really stuck with me that I liked, and I went through and did it, and then shared with someone special with me or to me, is write down a list of 50 things that make you happy. And hopefully it's not security all the way through. I think there should be a separation. But also make a list of 50 things that don't make you happy, and then take the two of those two and take some action on it. I think your mental health is worth more than the job.
Yeah, beautiful. Yeah, but is it then on a personal level? Because I would love to do this exercise on a personal level, and probably a lot of it syncs with the professional side as well.
But yeah, I mean, that's personal level both? For sure. You could do both. I mean, I don't think I would suggest 50 for personal or for professional. It might be impossible to act on. I think limiting it a little bit smaller to 10 or something like that. So you could actually prioritize and say, okay, these things bring me happiness at work. Let's focus on these 10 things in this order. Or do maybe like, you know, I hate to be a Google Sheets nerd, but use a risk calculator to figure out which ones outweigh each other. So which ones do you want to avoid? And then how do you delegate or get somebody else to do this for you?
Yeah. Ah, cool. And the other one might be trust bug bounty professionals.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Nice. It's a brilliant way to wrap it up. Thank you so much for your time. And I'm very... very pleased to hear your journey from the US through the Bay Area to the Netherlands to Amsterdam, and probably see you walk into the office one day in the city.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, it's small enough to run into someone on a bike, hopefully not physically, but yeah. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for listening to Cybersecurity Talks. If you've enjoyed this episode, don't forget to review and subscribe. For all further information on our live events and new podcast releases, go to csrecruitment.nl. Thank you and stay safe.